You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard. It's New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580.
Good morning, Northern Michigan News.
With Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Calm, cool, collected, Mr. Ron Jolly. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Very well. And it's wet out there, you said. I can't believe how rainy it is.
Yeah, it's pouring indeed. So we have Minnie joining us this morning on 10-6 of 22 Thursday. If you do happen to be joining us this morning, of course, we are live. Hello, it's Thursday.
It's Thursday, my dear. Did you know Prout was on?
Yes. Yes, they are, indeed. Funny. So, Saturday, if you are listening to the rebroadcast, it is a rebroadcast a little after 9 a.m., and we love, just for the history, just for the record, not the history, the record. Get the right word there, Dennis. We love doing this show because there's always so much to talk about, and this does hold our feet to the fire in terms of what shall we talk about. We meet every Monday and talk about what we should talk about. I think it's kind of interesting. This Monday we were talking about, well, you know, it's very interesting looking at the stock market. It's stressful for us as well. But we were talking about possibly a peak Fed negativity or hawkishness in terms of them raising rates. And the market anticipated, before we were able to get on the show, just for the record, the very same thing. That's what this market up is about. Thank you, Dennis. So I've got all my answers now. I can go do what I wanted to do.
Did it go up like the Dow about 700 points 2 days in a row?
It did indeed. 2.5% per day. Per day.
Wow.
We've not seen that since 2009. Just for those who keep track of such things.
Bizarre.
Yeah, 2.5% per day. Not bad, you know, in terms of a little relief rally, if you will. But joining us, too, is Nathan Prout.
Good morning, everyone.
Two Prouts for the price of one today.
Indeed. You betcha. And he's going to be talking about QCD issues and areas and problems that can occur. The 10 main problems that can occur with a QCD, or qualified charitable distribution. And from, what's her name again? I forget.
Is it Deanna?
Natalie.
Natalie.
The one who wrote the article.
The article is Natalie Choate, I believe.
Yeah, Natalie Choate. You bet. And then joining us, too, as Nathan alluded, is Deanne Jennings. Deanne.
Good morning, Traverse City.
And beyond.
Yes, I see you, Ron. I see your hand over there.
We see that hand.
We're like from Ludington up into Sioux, Canada.
Oh, and beyond. Good morning, and beyond.
We're international.
That's incredible.
No, that is incredible. Because I was thinking as you were talking, you know, we've been way downstate, you know, how far past Muskegon and been able to pick this station up.
Wow.
Just a great, you know, reach.
Powerhouse.
On over the lakes there.
A flamethrower.
Yes, indeed. Sound effects. So I'm going to be talking about the economy and what you might possibly do about it. Navigating through uncertainty. Now, the name of this, just for the record, so you can see, Ron,
yes.
Written September 25th, peak hawkishness.
Peak hawkishness.
Yes. Yes, if you can say that three times.
Peak hawkishness.
Well. So I love these quotes here at the very beginning. There are two kinds of forecasters, those who don't know and those who don't know they don't know, from Mr. John Kenneth Galbraith. I like that. Mm. That's okay. Next one. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance, but is it the illusion of knowledge. I was thinking as I read these two, I honestly don't think I've seen a year where I've learned this much. Well, Dennis, we had so much to learn. Yes, I know, but I did learn a lot this year. Forecasts create the mirage that the future is knowable. That was the one we quoted in our email blast.
Absolutely.
From Mr. Peter Bernstein. Last one, no amount of sophistication is going to allay the fact that all of one's knowledge is about the past and one's decisions are about the future. Indeed.
Indeed.
So, economic forecasters base their judgments on models. If A occurs, then B will occur. In looking at the U.S. economy and its associated interest rates, modeling is a complicated behavior, or endeavor, rather, and it is very difficult to know. Are we near that peak negativity? Well, is the Fed going to raise rates 1% or 0.75%?
What's peak negativity? What do you mean when you say that?
What I mean by that, great question, is the Fed, indeed, maybe now we talked about some forecasts a couple months ago and were dead wrong, just for the record. Yeah, Dennis, I remember that. We were thinking, based on some of the really good economic forecasters, including one from Bank of America, maybe that was 3 months ago, that the Fed wouldn't raise rates quite so aggressively, but they were so wrong. And so by relationship, so were we. My dad always said, you know, Dennis, if you hang out with the bad crowd, it doesn't mean, I don't care if you didn't do something wrong. He said, you're still going to get a whipping.
So the lesson is, don't hang out with the guys at Bank of America.
Well, no. That's exactly what I'm saying. So the reality is we're trying to guess the future, and sometimes we're wrong. It's hard to say that word. Yes, and we were in that case, but hopefully not this time.
But I remember that you were just reading a column by somebody, right? By one of the forecasters.
Yes.
Yeah. But you're saying you're wrong by association. You're hanging out.
By association, because we relayed that information, it could have been construed that Prout was wrong, which I understand.
Yeah. So peak negativity, then, is the...
Peak negativity, answer your question, finally, Ron... is that they may not raise rates quite so aggressively for a variety of reasons. Okay. Number one, foreign currencies, foreign central banks, with Great Britain having to step in last week in their own markets because their dollar had declined to such an extent, and they also had some issues with their own internal markets. They have declined about 25 to 30%, their pound, if you will, versus the U.S. dollar. You may have seen that. Well, they're almost at parity with the dollar. That's never happened, ever. Okay. So they're losing significant money both in their stock market and in the value of their currency. Well, that's a double negative. We don't like that in grammar, and we especially don't like that in the markets now, do we?
No.
Class, thank you.
No.
Thank you. So they've lost a lot of money. Well, they're not the only foreign country that are suffering as a result of the Fed being this aggressive with their interest rate rise. That's why our market is down, because they're anticipating a recession, those that look at these things. And the other part of this is, we think that these central banks around the world are having some impact on the Fed and saying, hey, when are you guys going to realize that you're probably being a little too aggressive, a little too late. The next part of this is, Wharton Prof rips Powell apart over Fed's biggest policy mistake ever. Wharton Professor Jeremy Siegel went on an epic rant against Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on Friday. That was Friday of last week. It was so long ago. I know, it's a week. The longtime market guru argued that the Fed made a massive error last year by not moving to tighten monetary policy before inflation got out of hand. We had all commodities going up at rapid rates, Chairman Powell and the Fed said. We don't see any inflation. We don't see a need to raise rates in 22. He was saying, this stance makes no sense to me whatsoever. So that's where some of these arguments are coming in, that indeed the economy is showing signs of softening, and this softening will have an impact on the Fed not raising rates quite so aggressively. And my thinking is simply this, that the market's response is already anticipating that. Well, many of you would say, including myself, well, this seems a bit early for the market to come up by 2.5%. That is not always a classic sign of a market bottom, but it could well be the initial signs of that. It could be. We don't know. Okay. All right. We don't know. We have a question.
Question from the text line. Good morning. Is the strong dollar going to limit foreign investment into our stock market, preventing a recovery?
It certainly could when our dollar is this strong. But think about this. If you own foreign currencies and the dollar's gone up this much against your currency, you've lost money. However, if you then own our currency when it's going down against your own dollar, that means that you have participated in a significant increase. That's the value of investing in foreign securities. If our dollar happens to be strong and it gets weaker, it means that those dollars overseas have gone up and you've made more money than you otherwise would have. So it's kind of the opposite impact. See?
All right. And someone said, yes, we know the stock market has not hit the bottom yet. Well, there it is.
Yeah, I know.
isn't that great? So obviously we don't know.
We don't.
But it would we would certainly have some of those indicators that would tell us that we may be there. Trying to prognosticate about that is very difficult. The word of the day. Here are the notes. When will the bear market end? This is from Capital Group Companies. They manage, they're the third largest money manager in the nation, somewhere behind Fidelity and Vanguard, $2 trillion, whatever. Anyway, they're huge. As stocks and bonds continue to tumble a week after the Fed Reserve's latest rate hike, investors are understandably asking how long this painful bear market will persist. Now, one of the things, this is from economist Daryl Spence. It's important to keep in mind one of the things that all past bear markets have had in common. I think this is important, is that they eventually ended. They eventually ended. Now, some people don't believe that, okay? As happens in every bear market we've had, what if this is the end as we know it? What if this is the end?
Bear markets, 20% drop?
Correct. And that's exactly where we've been this year. It's right out of the book. Ultimately, the economy and the markets righted themselves, ultimately. While past markets' results are not predictive of the future, it can be constructive to look at history. Based on the trajectory of past downturns, bear markets that were associated with a recession recession tended to last on average, this is not a happy thought, 18 months. So that would suggest we got another year of this. So, what's interesting is the most recent one that occurred in April of 2020 lasted about 6 weeks. Not 18 months. That was the COVID-induced recession, if you will, where the market came down more than 20%. At that time, about 36. All right, so bear markets that lasted about 18 months. Now, stocks and bonds are likely to come under further pressure with a recession looming as the Fed continues to aggressively tighten monetary policy in an attempt to curb inflation, which is hovering around 8%. Now, the recent inflation numbers were okay, but still not great. You know, they're wanting them to decline more aggressively. We'll see whether or not that's a script that they are willing to follow.
So they want prices to come down, right? We see some evidence that prices are coming down?
Yes. Yes. Yep. That the price pressures are continuing to come down. Looking ahead to 23, investors will turn their focus to another key question. When will the Fed stop raising rates or even start cutting again? It's easy to talk. Now, I think this is the key point here. I have it highlighted just for our class. Okay. It's easy to talk tough on inflation when your unemployment rate is under 4%. Now, those numbers came up a little bit stronger this year, this most recent read. The unemployment numbers came in higher than they were expecting. I think they were expecting about 204, 209, and they came in at about 217. It's in my view that at about as much pain as the Fed is willing to accept if it climbs to 6 or 7%. At the current pace of rate hikes, we're on course to hit 7% unemployment at the second half of next year, is what they're saying. So because of these rate hikes that they're anticipating, they're saying the Fed could induce this kind of unemployment rate that goes to 6 to 7%.
Isn't that hard to predict generally? But like, say right now, it's a unique time, isn't it, that the government basically is trying to engineer the economy, like transition it, mm-hmm. take it from what it's always been to something else?
Yes.
So it might kind of make it harder to predict those things?
Well, yeah, we have a demand destruction occurring a lot in this economy. A great example of that is our energy policies, yeah. which would, in an attempt to tamp down demand and encourage people too quickly to EVs, creates these disconnects within the market where Fed or government policy gets disconnected from reality because you have people trying to structure or direct an economy artificially. That's it. Always creates issues. You know, if you want a price to go up in something, get the Fed involved to drive it down, and it will, you know, it'll always cause the opposite effect. It tends to do that because they're trying to engineer something artificially, and it always creates issues. And that's why, you know, anyway, without going on a rant, it doesn't often work. Now, they can certainly engineer interest rates, but the resulting issues that occur from that are very difficult to guess. One of the problems that's been talked about is that there are no individuals with any real life banking experience on the Fed, with no business banking experience. All right, so some of that is a disconnect in terms of what it is they're trying to engineer and where reality hits.
Wow.
So if they continue to get the pressures that we're thinking that they're seeing, the markets are viewing this as very positive, that they believe the Fed is near its end on this. Who knows whether they're correct? I don't think any of us trust a short-term read like that, but that is certainly, just stepping back for a moment, a very positive indicator in any historic time frame to say, to look at the markets like this and say, that's pretty marked, that the markets would be up for 2 days in a row that way. We'll see in terms of any follow-through in the coming weeks. Mm. Who knows? But it points up the fact that investing in this kind of market, the keys to prevailing through stock market declines, realize that declines are inevitable and have not lasted forever. Some other great notes from Capital Group. The bottom line, accept declines as a normal part of the investment cycle. I don't know any one of us who want to accept these, but the market is the most efficient mechanism anywhere in the world for transferring wealth from impatient people to patient people. That's Mr. Warren Buffett. Now, how many billions has he lost? Well, does Warren really care? He's lost billions, but he's worth hundreds of billions. I don't think Warren cares enough about it to make a mistake and sell his positions. He was in there buying Occidental Petroleum when the prices were below 60, and it's at 67 or 68. It could well come down again. But he's looking at the long term in terms of, I'm buying an investment that I believe will go up in the future because I'm getting a great price for it right now. So if you're maintaining your position, that may well be the very best thing you can do. But if you're uncomfortable enough to come in and see us, then by all means do that. And or give us a call. That's what we're there for. Sometimes you just need to talk to someone. I get that. That's what we're there for. We're not trying to talk you out of something. I'll say we're trying to talk you through something. Because I get it. I've already said it. This is not any fun. But how do we work through this? And so we can show you lots of information, perhaps, that will help you navigate the negativity out there. Because we all know this. The news tends to foment, breed negativity over and over and over again. They tend to focus on the negative. And it doesn't help any of us when we're trying to work through all of this stuff. So Nathan's going to be talking about QCD land, qualified charitable distributions, and the 10 issues that can occur that can mess these things up.
Yeah, we'll try to get to all 10, but we'll see, because some of them are a little more confusing than other ones. Thank you to the IRS for that. So the first one has to do with the wrong age. So the IRA owner must be age 70 and a half or older.
And that, interrupt just briefly to set it up, QCD is again a qualified charitable donation.
Distribution. But distribution. Yeah, you're on the right track. Yeah. Yep.
All right.
So this is confusing for two reasons with the 70 and a half. Because first, the rule refers to the donor's actual age 70 and a half birthday, not the year of reaching 70 years and 6 months. So an example is we have an individual who was born in June of 1952 and will turn 70 and a half in December 30th of 2022. She can make a QCD on December 30th or 31st of 2022. Because December 31st of 2022 is a Saturday, as a practical matter, she is limited to just one possible day for her 2022 QCD. Another confusing aspect of this is that it does not conform with the RMD age, which is now 72. So she can make the qualified charitable distribution for one day in 2022 and all year of 2023, even though she will not be subject to any RMDs until 2024.
Now, I'm sure everyone followed that one, right?
Isn't
that
crazy?
There were a lot of numbers in there. But
I guess so.
Is that a story problem?
But a qualified charitable distribution is an option that you have when you're required, when you have an RMD, when you're required to take a distribution, right?
Correct, yep.
So you're saying that there are all these rules that apply before you're even required to take a distribution.
Right, so you could do the QCD before you're required to take the distribution. You know, a lot of people use this strategy instead of, you know, having to take their RMD directly to themselves, you know, to lower their taxes. But there could be, of course, other people in a different boat for that.
Now, of course, the big picture is the reason anyone would want to do a QCD is that most can't write off charitable contributions because the standard deduction is so high. It's about $23,000 to $25,000. Calm down, CPAs in the audience. I'm giving an estimate only, I promise. So $23,000 to $25,000 is a standard deduction. Most folks aren't going to overcome that with regular charitable distributions and or deductions that normally come off their tax rate or their tax returns.
Yeah. Another mistake that can happen is attempting to take it from the wrong account. QCDs can only be made from a traditional IRA, but not from a ongoing SEP IRA or a simple IRA. A SEP or a simple IRA is treated as ongoing if it is maintained under an employer arrangement, under which an employer contribution is made for the plan year ending with or within the IRA owner's taxable year in which the charitable contributions would be made.
So in essence, if you're making ongoing contributions to these things, you can't do a QCD from them.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's easy to make this mistake if the IRA owner has multiple IRAs, one of which is a SEP IRA. QCDs normally cannot be made from a Roth IRA due to the requirement that a QCD must be made only from amounts otherwise includable in gross income.
Yeah, so you don't obviously then want to make a Roth IRA charitable contribution is through a QCD because that money's never taxable. The taxable money is the only money that you want to come out to make a QCD, but there's some other accounts too that won't allow that.
Yeah, another one is a 401k. An owner with substantial funds in a 401k who would like to make QCDs can transfer money from their 401k to an IRA, but only after they take their applicable RMD for the year, if any, from the 401k plan. If the 401k plan participant is subject to RMDs, any money they take out of the plan is applied first to their RMD. Only after the RMD from the 401k plan is satisfied can money be transferred or rolled over into an IRA for an allowable QCD.
That's why we ask all these gnawingly detailed questions when we call a 401k provider with a client. All right, has the RMD already been taken? If it hasn't been and you're no longer a participant in that 401k, then you have to take it before any money's come out, as Nathan just discussed. So there are a lot of rules and regulations around these things, and it can really wind up creating some problems, but also, of course, then the opportunities.
Yeah. Another thing that we've seen people try to do is using the wrong charity. So QCDs can be made to most kinds of public charities, but a few are off limits, such as donor-advised funds.
So even though it has a charitable intent, you cannot take money out of an IRA as a QCD and give it direct to your donor-advised fund.
Or any supporting organizations, such as a public charity that exists solely to support a particular school or other charitable institution.
What's a donor-advised fund?
It's a fund that generally is set up for you to be able to take a deduction in an immediate year for giving a contribution to that entity. But perhaps you haven't decided yet which charities you want to give it to, so you get an immediate deduction if you can qualify for that deduction in the year in which you give it, but it then make contributions to the charities in future years so that you can schedule that or think more clearly, thoroughly, if you will, about where you want that money to go.
Yeah, another mistake is a wrong transmission. A QCD must be paid directly from the IRA to the charity. So if somebody has a checkbook IRA, for instance, they can write a check directly from that IRA to the charity. But if that IRA money comes out via check that is payable to the IRA owner, that distribution will not qualify as a QCD.
Sorry, you do not pass go. You do not collect $200.
Even if you attempt to endorse the check, it will not work.
Hmm.
You might be able to fix it with something like a 60-day rollover, but that gets extremely messy, and you would like to not do that in the first place, if at all possible.
Right. You can tend to create more problems than it helps.
Yeah. Another mistake is a wrong tax shelter. So if an IRA owner wants to make QCDs in excess of their RMD for the year, they should talk with their tax advisor to make sure this is the most tax-advantaged way to make the charitable gift for that year. Perhaps a donation, for instance, of appreciated assets held outside of the IRA might be more tax-efficient.
So make sure certain you're looking at the forest as well as the trees. Okay, what are my options for giving here? Do I want to gift perhaps appreciated stock to this charity? We've seen that again and again. Well, I've got ABC stock. It's grown from $5 to $20. I want to give a contribution to my church or whatever organization that is, but yet I don't want to have to pay the appreciation. You get a full deduction for the full amount given, but yet you don't have to pay the tax on any of the appreciation of that stock. And if you are able to deduct in that year, you get a full deduction for the full amount given to that charity through the stock itself.
Yeah. Another got you, if you will, is deductible IRA contributions after age 70 and a half. So this one targets anybody who might be attempting to double dip, but if the IRA owner has made any deductible IRA contributions in or after the year of reaching age 70 and a half, the QCD income exclusion to which they otherwise would be entitled is reduced dollar for dollar by the amount of those deductible contributions.
So if you gave a $2,000 deductible contribution to your IRA, you wanted to put some money into it. I'm 72 years old. And at the same year, you had $2,000 of QCDs you were trying to accomplish from that same IRA. They offset each other 100%. All right. So you might better, in that case, put the money into a Roth IRA as a 72-year-old if you're taking qualified charitable distributions from your IRA.
And if you are still eligible to make IRA contributions at that age.
There you go. That means you've had earned income.
Exactly. Another mistake is forgetting to take the benefit. When the
I would say that's a huge one.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something that we help remind people of, you know, by sending out a letter showing, you know, all of their qualified charitable distributions for the year that they have made from their IRAs. But when the IRA provider sends out their 1099 for the year, this form just shows the gross distribution from the IRA. We've got into discussions about accountants with this, but the 1099 will only show it as a distribution. It will not have it coded correctly or give any clue to your accountant or anything like that that this would be a deductible contribution because it's a QCD.
Well, it's not deductible.
Not deductible, pardon me.
Not includable.
Not includable, exactly.
Correct. So. Thanks. Now everyone's happy, right? What this is saying is make certain that you tell your accountant or bookkeeper that, listen, all right, I'm giving money to these five charities. It totals $10,000 from my regularly scheduled RMDs. They've been given to these five organizations. Now, we give you a letter at the end of the year with a big red detail at the top. These are your QCDs for this year.
Yeah, we provide that for you so you can give it to your accountant, make it easier.
Yes. So the discussions have been, like everything else, this is relatively new. And so some accountants, even though they've been at it a long time, don't always realize this change. And most of them are up to speed now. But this was, we've gotten in discussions in a couple of years past because of this issue. Related to the QCD story. All right. Is that it there, Nathan? We're good, right?
One more example would be...
Okay, one more.
Just to make sure, you cannot get anything back for giving a QCD. So if you get a gift in exchange, the entire gift will not qualify as a QCD. Right. Unless that something received can be disregarded under IRS rules for charitable gifts. So intangibles might include things like a calendar or a coffee mug. But if that gift were to entitle you to be able to buy tickets or something like that, that is not allowable under the IRS laws.
Even if it's tickets to the last Tigers game this season.
Nope.
Sorry.
Nope.
Don't do it. Don't do it. So, Deanne, stats. Deanne is stats.
Absolutely.
Stat.
So, there has been a 53-47 split between up and down trading days in the U.S. stock market over the last 50 years, so 1972 to 2021. In spite of the near every other day volatility, the S&P 500 still generated a positive 11.1% per year return, and that source is BTN Research.
I think the numbers that I've seen, now this is obviously an estimate, but if you'd missed the 10 best or 20 best trading days of those, your return would have gone to about 7%, 6 to 7%, somewhere in there. So a huge difference if you miss those big up days. Yeah.
Absolutely. An individual turning age 72 during calendar year 2022 can delay his or her first required minimum distribution, which is what we're talking about, from pre-tax requirement plans until 3/31/2023. But when he or she will need to take a second RMD as of 12/31/2023. The 12-20-2019 Secure Act changed the age requirement to begin RMDs from age 70.5 to age 72. See a tax expert for details. That source was Secure Act. And that is a big deal that the age has changed. And for everybody to be aware, age 72 is the RMD age.
Why all year long you have to take out that RMD in the year in which you turn 72. Okay. And for those who might want to delay because they have a significant income, you could theoretically delay until the next year, but you have to take two required minimum distributions in the year if you wait after, till the April after.
So why did they increase the age? I thought from the government point of view, they want that money out.
Well, they do want that money out, but it was a nod to the fact that they were also requiring all those distributions for children, in most every case, to take them over a 10-year period to empty those accounts. So this was a nod to our increasing life expectancy and hoping, in essence, that people will leave that money in there a bit longer maybe and or help themselves. So it gives some more flexibility in terms of making Roth conversions if that's the case.
Uh-huh.
All right. These five U.S. states have the greatest percentage of population over age 65. Hey, Ron, you want to guess? Give me a couple.
I'm looking at it right now, so I can't fake it. I can't fake it.
You can't look away.
I can't fake it.
Yeah, he has a copy of the stats.
I would have guessed Florida.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So Maine, 21.8%. Florida, 21.3%. West Virginia, 20.9%, Vermont, 20.6%, and Delaware, 20%.
Michigan!
Yeah, we got throw in Michigan.
I was hoping you were going to play that this morning.
I love that.
Frankly, when you were talking to the Coast Guard, here goes Rabbit Trail. Sorry, here goes Dennis.
That's
on his
okay.
Rabbit Trail.
Yeah. Rabbit
when
trail
you were talking
away.
To the Coast Guard gentleman, rather, Brian, Lieutenant Brian.
Brian.
Something, whatever. Lieutenant Brian.
Yeah.
Lieutenant. Anyway, he was talking about what's happened in Florida, and I thought, I want to hear that Michigan quote because it's like, I think I like Michigan better.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Don't we all love
Michigan?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. We'll
Utah has the youngest population with 11.7% over age 65. That source is agingInplace.org. And obviously, as we're talking about Florida, our thoughts go out to all the Floridians who are dealing with the aftermath of the hurricane. Tax receipts collected by the U.S. in April 2022 were $863.6 billion, creating a monthly surplus of $308.2 billion, both numbers representing all-time monthly records for the U.S., and the source is Treasury Department.
Wow. Man,
$863 billion in tax receipts.
Mm-hmm. A record amount taken in.
Yes.
Yes,
indeed.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Wow. And here's a fun stat. Candy is big money even outside the holidays. Last year, Americans said they ate candy 2 to 3 times per week. That's holding back to me.
Yeah, that's pretty conservative. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And spent $36.9 billion on confectionery. In total, $21.1 billion on chocolate, $12.7 billion on non-chocolate candy, and $3.1 billion on gum and mints. And that source is National Confections Association. We like our chocolate at Prout Financial Design.
You do.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
Amazing.
That's fun.
On the record tax receipts, we're up to $31 trillion in debt now. We just hit that, the federal debt.
Yes.
But with the interest rates going up now, so a lot of the expenditures that our government spends our money on is on interest now. That's going up.
It's onerous, I would say, because that number has gone up twice and triple time. So a few years back, T-bills were yielding almost nothing. And now Treasury bills, considered the safest and shortest term of Treasury obligations, which one can buy, they're somewhere between 3% and 4%. So the interest rates have risen dramatically. We'll just call that 3 to 4 times the interest that they were previously paying, but they will now be paying. Treasury notes and rates rising dramatically. The graphs are incredible in terms of interest rate changes. All of a sudden, you're going to be getting yields on CDs again. Who would have thought, right? Keys to prevailing through stock market declines, just to get some more detail on this. Declines are inevitable and have not lasted forever. We talked about that. History has shown that stock market declines are a natural part of investing. It may also reassure all of us to know that the market has always recovered from declines. Because these companies and the people that run them work diligently to not only cut cost, which is why the employment market is getting soft. We're hearing through the grapevine and, you know, on the street that Google, other major companies they're not hiring nearly as aggressively as they once were. So all those hiring decisions are being put off or held off for right now or delayed, however you want to say it. Although past results don't guarantee future results, remembering that downturns have been temporary may help assuage your fears. So it's interesting to note, too, 5% or more declines occur usually about 3 times per year and last an average of 43 days. 10% or more declines, about once per year, and last about 110 days. We can just say between 3 and 4 months. 15% or more, once about every 3 years, and last about 250 days, 8 months or so. 20% or more, about once every 6 years, last about a year or so. So while these are painful and difficult, the term of these is often very short. And as we alluded to as well, the resultant increase is usually totally unexpected because they are looking into the future, they're gazing at this, and they're doing their best to make an intelligent decision about when that's going to respond to the positive. And current situations would say that the potential for that is there even now, that they're already responding. We'll see, as we discussed.
Do you know offhand, or could there be a particular event that could cause a bear market or a downswing to turn obviously based on, like, the end of a war or an election or... the end of a pricing crisis?
It's usually, if I can generalize, it's usually not one thing, but a concurrence of several items that occur, that are happening, rather. Whether it's the Fed easing, whether it's, operations in Ukraine, all of a sudden we see some light at the end of that tunnel. Whatever it is, it's usually a combination of several of those. But it's usually very difficult to anticipate as well. Questions were, well, should I continue investing through this kind of market cycle? The way that works, the only way that it works is if you continue to invest through that cycle on the way down as well as through onto the way up. So there are hard and fast rules to this. And sometimes your hard and fast may be different than someone else's. Happy to have that conversation if you'd like. Okay.
Prout Financial Design in Traverse City,
947.
3992. You got it. Dennis Prout, Nathan Prout, Deanne Jennings in today. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Appreciate
it.